What do you think you're doing, young man?
It's
sit up straight when you're doing your little voice.
Happy
things.
Mother's Day from 55 KRC.
At 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Election Day. End of your wait. If issue three passes, we will.
That does not make sense.
No, issue three does not make sense. There's a lot of things going on in the news today, and we have a great show lined up. Thanks to Joe Strecker, who... Anytime it's a really packed show, he texts me the day before, because normally I come in, I don't know who's on other than the set guests we have throughout the week, like Tech Friday with Dave Hatter or my dad. So yesterday I get the Strecker text, better be on time tomorrow, we've got a really packed show, and sure enough we do, and I cannot wait to have these guests on. Got a lot to talk about today, and of course phone calls will be welcome in between. 749-5500, 800-823, talk, #550 on AT&T phone. Issue 3, of course. Today's the day. You got to say no. Everybody's out. And just please, please, it doesn't matter your political stripe. Everybody in a position of knowledge and information is talking about how devastating this is going to be. One of those people, Dan Hills. We'll hear from Dan again at 6:30. One more word, one final plea for you. The police department, the fire department, the Center for Closing the Health Gap, the people who want potholes fixed, anybody, to vote no on issue three. Garbage collection. Yeah, I don't know why I don't think of that one first, Joe, because that is going to have the biggest, most noticeable upfront impact on everybody right away. You're right. Every 2 weeks, it's going to be down from 1 week to every 2 weeks. You don't think that's going to pile up? We have recycle. I got to tell you what, we get Rumpke. I praise Rumpke all the time. I write a check. It's one of the few checks I write. I write with a smile on my face because I know what this world would look like without garbage collection. And they do an efficient job. They don't complain. They pick up pretty much every single thing I could put out the curb. We separate our recyclables, and we're really good about it. But they went down to every two-week pickup for recycling some time ago. And I understand that some are claiming that they never have bothered to recycle anyway. But the secondary industry for purchasing recyclables fell off when China decided it wasn't going to take the world's garbage anymore. This is my background understanding of it. There may be other factors involved here. But regardless, it doesn't matter. I want to recycle. I want to at least make the effort to do what's right to keep that stuff in the chain, right? Because there's no reason to throw something away that's got a useful life. Fine. But when they went to 2 weeks, we have a big recycling bin. It fills up, and we start putting recyclables in cardboard boxes that surround the recycling bin. I mean, we don't even come close to putting half of real trash in the regular trash bin. But the point being, I have a real-life illustration in my home of what happens when the garbage isn't picked up every week. And, you know, we're not a big consuming home either. Now multiply that times every single human being living in the city of Cincinnati. Sometimes in very concentrated areas. You know, my wife and I, and it's my wife and I, my daughter primarily. That's it. Those are the three consumers in our family. There are a lot of three-people families in the city of Cincinnati. There's a lot of four and maybe more than five, six, seven. How many? All consuming throughout the week and all putting garbage in their garbage cans and maybe even doing the recycling thing. That's going to sit and sit, and the cans will start to overflow. And there'd be a demand for more extra garbage cans. I mean, somebody in the city of Cincinnati, how many garbage cans do you get? And do you think your can will hold two full weeks worth of garbage, or will it start overflowing like the Thomas recycling bin after 6 or 7 days? It's just something to think about. But, you know, you're right, Joe, and I don't know why I don't think about that one first and foremost. I worry about the police department. I worry about the fire. I worry about roads, obviously infrastructure, core services. But then I live in the city of Cincinnati, but I'll drive around and I'll experience those things. I'll go into the city of Cincinnati, and those are the things I'll think about. Because I obviously want to be able to rely on the police department to show up in the event there's a problem. I want to be able to drive on smooth roads. I want the city to be attractive to outside folks who might want to move here and to invest. If I'm living in the Cincinnati, I'm going to want my damn trash picked up more often than every 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? That's going to have a profound impact. That's issue three. Say goodbye to it. Oh, the restaurants. Yeah, I know. I suppose the restaurants, Joe, have to contract out. They'll probably have to hire Rumpke to come in and pick that extra up. I don't know how that works. You know, I don't even know if there's clearly the city garbage collectors under some kind of union contract, right? Can you actually contract out separate goods and services and free yourselves of the burden of union contract pickup with downtown Cincinnati? I don't know. I just know it's going to be a bloody problem. Anyway, Dan Hill's up at 6:30. How do you get past Dan Hill's going down the rundown this morning? 7:05, Jennifer Gross. Ohio State Representative from District 52, and she is outspoken. What is House Bill 248? We're going to learn. I like it. It's a freedom bill. It protects those who refuse COVID-19 shots from being denied services, forced to follow requirements they wear masks or other penalties or financial or social penalties from business, schools, government. Basically, they can't tell you what to do, Bill. She's a nurse practitioner. She is not anti-vaccine. In fact, she's pro-vaccine. So it's the Vaccine Choice and Anti-Discrimination Act. And who among us is in favor of discrimination? Not I. We'll hear from Congressman Steve Shabbat on the infrastructure bill. McConnell says, no, it ain't happening. No Senate Republican to vote for it. With that note, I also have noted today's Wall Street Journal, Treasury expecting to borrow $1.3 trillion over the second half of fiscal 2021. This is on the heels of borrowing $463 billion this quarter. How long can we sustain the borrowing? And at some point, will the world finally just say, you know what, screw it. We're not going to loan you money anymore. You're no longer a good risk. Also talk about Kamala Harris being in town, not to talk about the roads and infrastructure or maybe replacing the Brent Spence Bridge, but to talk about public transit. 8:15, J.R. Carson, senior litigator with the Buckeye Institute. This decision broke my heart. He's involved with it. It's on appeal. It's from Franklin County. The judge ruled against employees who are seeking to get their commuter income tax back. I keep saying that's going to be a winner. They can't tax you when you're not working in the city. This judge in Franklin County, though, reached a contrary conclusion based upon that law that was passed. House Bill 197, parenthetically, that's the one that was passed, gives these municipalities like the city of Cincinnati the power to continue to collect taxes from you, even though you're not working in their jurisdiction, until 30 days after Governor DeWine rescinds his state of emergency declaration. Now, how many businesses out there in the state of Ohio do you think are appealing behind the scenes to Governor DeWine to continue this emergency declaration because their cities will starve without the taxes from all the commuters that aren't going to be commuting anymore? Just throw that out there. 8:20 with John Morris, Ohio Valley Builders and Contractors, on inflation. The cost of building materials has gone through the roof. Frank LaRose. We all know Secretary Stank LaRose. He's going to talk about getting out and vote today. He'll be on at 8:30, and then we'll have Kristen Worthington from my friends at Home Helpers Home Care to join us at 8:50 for Ask the Expert. Let's go to the phones. Got Terry on the line, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Hey, Terry, welcome to the program, and a very happy Tuesday to you.
Hey, good morning. It's been a while. How you been doing?
I've been well, man, and I'm glad to be able to say that. I hope you can say the same.
Hey, we're hanging in there.
Good.
Hanging in there. Yeah, I found a surprise that the health department loves to chime in on all these issues. But then when it comes to the picture of Rome, when the garbage all built up and the plague ran rampant, and the disease-carrying animals, bugs, and fungus, and, you know, all those biological things that love just to kill us here on planet Earth. And they all can be born out of trash piling up after 2 weeks.
You got that, my friend. I said that the other day. The rat problem will increase. You can't. You there's nothing you can do about that.
Where's Amy Atkins? Where's everybody at? Everybody where's our saviors of the republic?
Well, this is up to the voters of the city of Cincinnati. It's once removed from Amy Acton. If Amy Acton were to chime in on it, we'd like to think that she would. She also would point out the health risk of allowing garbage to pile up, and therefore would have to advocate for a no on issue 3. Not because she's against affordable housing. No, because the practical realities of the yes on issue 3 are manifold. One of them is disease-borne illness from rats due to garbage pickup. See, there you go. And then we could also talk about fire and police and Center for Closing the Health Gap and on and on and on and on. But, yeah, there you go. That's a no from her on issue 3 if we had to guess. Appreciate it, Terry. Take care, my friend. Let's get one more for now. Todd, welcome to the program, and happy Tuesday to you.
Top of the Tuesday to you, buddy. How you doing?
Good, man. What's going on?
Hey, quick question. I live in Anderson, Turpin area, outside the city limits. Am I allowed to vote today? Vote no on issue 3?
You're in the city of Cincinnati or you're not? If you're not in the city of Cincinnati, I would say no.
I never received one thing in the mail about voting. My mom lives in the city. She voted no, but I was like, I want to vote no, but you hear all this stuff, you know, it's going to affect us, but we don't get to vote.
No, you're right. That's the thing, and that's why I bring it up as an issue, Todd, knowing full well that a lot of my listeners aren't in the city of Cincinnati.
It's
face it, it's a tri-state. But the city is the axle for the wheel the spokes coming out. The counties all around are impacted by how functional or dysfunctional the city of Cincinnati is.
And I don't get to vote for one of the 6 bozos running either. That's the other problem I have with too.
Well, therein lies the larger problem, Todd. We have this unknown, uncharted waters coming into November. And if you have an unknown thing like all new council members, everybody's been term limited out, we're going to be new. You know who the potential mayors are going to be. There's 6 of them to choose from. So you're already concerned about that. You're going to have 2 after today. And that group may be stuck with $50 million less to run the city with. We're talking about unprepared, inexperienced folks running for this job for the first time, except for a guy like David Mann. I'm worried, man. I'm worried.
I am too. Hey, good talking to you.
Take care, Todd. Take care of yourself. Thanks for calling. 8516-55KARE City Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Foreign Exchange, get your imported car fixed. You got to go to Foreign Exchange. I go to Westchester because I know I'm going to get great work done there. It is 520, coming up at 521, 55 KRC, the talk station. I just saw Jim Jordan had posted something about the gas prices going up like 50 cents in a couple of days. Yeah, 50 cents per gallon since he took office. I think he's on the low end. And you are going to be stuck with inflation. I'm telling you, we're going to be able to talk about it later in the program, but all I see around me is inflation. Warren Buffett is talking about substantial inflation, rising prices. Again, later in the program, we're going to have John Morris from the Associated Builders and Contractors talk about this. But one of the many businesses that Berkshire Hathaway owns, that's Warren Buffett's company, is a home builders. Actually, they have 9 home builders in addition to their manufacturing and housing operations, the largest in the country in terms of conglomerate ownership. He said, so we really do a lot about housing. In his words, the costs are just up, up, up. Steel costs, you know, just every day they're going up. And I've seen lumber prices are through the roof as well. So that is inflation. He is calling it inflation. He said, we are raising prices, meaning the acquisition of the building materials, which they then pass along to the consumer. Yes, they do that. We are raising prices, people are raising prices to us, and it's being accepted. Well, you don't have much of a choice when inflation hits. The question is our government going to continue to contribute to the inflation with its practices? Green New Deal is one of the ones. I don't know what you've been paying for gas lately. I know it's gone up dramatically. As I said, I started with that post from Congressman Jim Jordan. I looked up local gas buddy prices, and it looks like, you know, $2.50, $2.45 a gallon is roughly for regular. Moved to Los Angeles, California, in Southern California. Whoa, $4.99 for regular. Premium, $5.99. That's a loin girder. Oh yeah. I saw this article. This is on Fox. They interviewed a guy named Joe Keith. He's with Pacific Gas Lines. You know, and you think, wow, okay, is this the Green New Deal? Is this Joe Biden's policies kicking in? No, they haven't kicked in yet. Joe Keith, the Pacific Gas Lines, he says it's a 50 to 80% drop in delivery requests over the COVID-19 stay-at-home orders last year, right? Remember when no one was on the roads and no one was driving? Well, gas stations and people who facilitate the production and distribution of gasoline, they got a lot fewer orders. In his case, 50 to 80% drop. We don't need gas. Nobody's over here buying it. Well, guess what? We're coming out the other side. And people are now demanding gas that isn't there anymore because they don't have drivers. I kid you not. He said, what we really need is more people coming in. That an increase in drivers will actually bring the prices down and prevent what industry leaders fear could be a shortage of fuel at gas stations across the country coming to a theater near you. He says he can't even keep up with demand presently. I'd love to say yes to all those people, but we only have so many drivers that are equipped and qualified. He said, those poor guys, they're working extra days, and you're putting more and more and more demand on those poor guys. So, are you interested in a job? I always worry when I bring this kind of thing up to Joe Strecker. I'm going to look up. He's going to be gone. And I know you don't want to drive a gasoline tanker, Joe, but the tanker industry is heavily recruiting right now. Becoming a qualified driver, at least according to this article, could take as little as 6 months. Starting wages, $80,000 a year. 525 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Yeah, supply and delivery issues are really a problem. $529. You learn something every day. Like today is Star Wars Day. Is this a big day for like the cosplay folks, Joe? Is that what that means? No, I can't say that on radio. Star Wars Day. Okay. Over to local stories. Got another one dead and another injured. A shooting this morning and over there. It happened about 1:30 this morning. Intersection of Walnut and 13th Streets. Police showed up, found two men shot. First responders said one guy was dead at the scene. The other one taken to UC Medical Center with non-life-threatening injuries. Police haven't released the name of the man who was killed. Also have not said if they have a suspect yet in this case. And I'm sure if you have any information, they would love to hear from you. 352-3040 for Crime Stoppers. You think affordable housing would have solved that one, Joe? It's going to solve everything. Okay, well, I know that is something that has been asserted by many. I'll let your observation stand on its own merits. Probably heard this top of the hour news. Kroger stores are going to stop offering single-use plastic bags June 1st in the city stores, which means I can go to Kroger outside of the city and still get a plastic bag. Anyway, council voted in 2020 to ban the plastic bags at grocery stores, et cetera, like restaurants, anybody that sells food. I love this. According to Fox 19's report, the hope is that eliminating plastic will reduce waste, litter, pollution, and save money. I'm scratching my head of the whole save money thing. Anyway, the reduced waste, litter, and pollution, probably, maybe, if you're going to have no plastic bags floating around. Guess we'll see how that reconciles itself with not having garbage picked up until every second week. Anyway, it was supposed to start. This is the great thing. Elimination of the plastic bag was supposed to begin January 1st, right? But no. Why did they stop it? Because of COVID-19. We can't get rid of plastic bags of COVID-19. Remember when we were all rubbing and scrubbing and everything down? Every time we turned around, we got alcohol rub out or wipe and everything. And then they tell us, you know, a year into it, that, well, you know what? You're wasting your time with all that. Something we probably all should have known, since none of us wiped down the produce when we walked through the produce section at Kroger and picked up an apple and looked at it and put it back down. And only for the next guy to come and maybe grab that particular apple that you touched, put it in his bag, and take it home and eat it. Nobody washing everything down in between, were they? I've been on a bit of a tear this morning over this stuff. Anyhow, no plastic bags downtown Cincinnati beginning June 1st. Bring your own bag, or interestingly enough, pay a nickel. Which always makes me think that it's not about the environment, because if it's really about the environment, then you wouldn't be able to buy a plastic bag because they are environmentally ruinous. A nickel gets you around that for some reason. That's like belching massive amounts of carbon into the air, and then the Greens say, oh my God, you're producing all this carbon, and the way they get around it, you pay for it. Does that take the carbon out of the air that you're supposed to not be putting? No, you just charge some money. That's the end of the problem. Nah. Anyway, let's go to the phone and see what we got going on here. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program. Happy Tuesday.
Hey, happy Tuesday, Brian. I really didn't have anything right on topic, although I find it really hard to believe you didn't know. You're not a Star Wars guy? Or
no, when Star Wars first came out, it was, 1976? I was 11. I was really into it when I was 11, but I became an adult. So, whatever.
Yes, yes,
I'm not to be critical to Star Wars fans. I just don't listen. Why isn't there a pick another movie day? I like old Humphrey Bogart, like Casablanca. Everybody loves Casablanca. Why isn't there a Casablanca day? Maybe there is. I don't know.
I don't know, Brian. It's easy. I don't mean to make you feel bad. I was born in 1987.
Wow. Youngster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been out for a while. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, no, but nonetheless, Star Wars is good. I was just trying to make you feel like a nerd for even bringing it up. But
I was flabbergasted that there was actually a day. That's why I brought it up. I'm listening to the news. I look up at Joe. I go, there's actually a Star Wars day? He shook his head. He goes, I'm staying off Facebook today, he said. I don't want to see it. I look up, and I know one of my listeners, apparently a big Star Wars fan, Matthew. You know who you are, Matt. And he gave you a May the 4th be with you, a big, graphic and all that kind of crap. Anyway, Larry, you didn't call about that, I understand.
Well, no, and actually today I just called to say something out loud and let you talk. But so I've taught government at the school that I was hired at. When I started there, I taught only government. That's it, right?
Okay.
But apparently what they hired me for, because that's what they gave me, right?
Right.
And then, little by little by little, up until this year, they gave me my assignment for next year, and I don't teach government. And then, I told them 2 days in a row, 2 days, I guess I'll give them a third, fourth, and fifth day when I get the chance. But, I told the powers that be for now, I really want to teach government. It's what I'm good at. It's what I like. The statistics say I'm good enough at it, so why am I not teaching it? And I get a bunch of left, right, and, whichever way I guess I'm taking it. But just want to throw it out there. Do you think there's a reason I'm not teaching government?
That would depend on your political situation in there, Larry. Uh-huh. You didn't talk about the leanings of the powers that be. Those who are responsible for deciding whether you teach government or science or philosophy or whatever, they have reasons for why they're assigning you to something other than government. I would certainly, if I was in your position, want to know exactly why. Who made the decision? What maybe memoranda or file information is in there? Maybe you have your own personnel file. Take a look in that.
What science, what actual documentation made them change their mind?
I think it seems to me you'd be entitled to ask for that, Larry. It involves you and your employment, and I think you're entitled to the answer of why it is you're not teaching government anymore. I'd love to know, Larry, and I pray that it isn't because of your political leanings one way or another, but something tells me it may very well be, given that it's government they're talking about, right? Take care, my friend. 536. Tom, if you want to hang on, we'll get your call coming out of the gate before we get to the stack of stupid. Fasten Pro Roofing, though, for great roofers. Please call Fasten Pro. And, Ray and Amanda, owners of Fasten Pro, don't want you to wait until you got a major problem on your hands. So holy cow, I guess Jason wasn't available to cover for Chuck this morning. Just gotta run over there and check and see how he is, man. That sounded terrible. Poor Chuck Ingram. He's a great guy. He does traffic for basically the entire central United States for all the iHeartMedia. So he was doing Cleveland traffic and Chicago or Columbus traffic and everything like that. And boy, sounds terrible. Man, keep my fingers crossed for you, brother. Anyhow, let's go to the phones where we get to the stack. It's too big. We got Tom on the line. Hey, Tom, thanks for holding and happy Tuesday.
Hello?
Yep, you're on.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm in a bad spot. Somebody give Chuck a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Hey, they're getting rid of all these plastic bags. What am I going to do to fill my little trash can?
You'll have to go. No, Tom, the answer is you go to Kroger or your grocery store and you buy the heavier, thicker ones from Glad that will take even longer to deteriorate in an environmental landfill situation. So there you go.
This hurts my feelings. I they didn't just
Tom, we lost you. You are in a bad spot. You were right in that call. Anyway, over the stack is stupid. I don't have to read the whole article or explain it to you, but this is one of those, what did you think would happen? NASA asteroid simulation ends in unavoidable disaster for Earth. Yeah.
What?
They're following these objects, of course, that stand a potential to run into the world at some point, an asteroid. Near-Earth objects, NEO is what they call them. And they find a whole bunch of them more and more every year because, of course, technology increases every year. It says NASA is currently tracking roughly 25,000 near-Earth objects, and new discoveries are being added at a rate of around 30 every week. So the lingering question, because it's brought up in the movies and scientists contemplate it all the time, is, well, what happens if a giant asteroid hits the Earth? Let's see. Unavoidable disaster. Right. You never know when your number's coming up. This one struck me as rather odd, and I have to be rather delicate in going through it due to FCC compliance and delicacy issues, but this falls under the category, I think you're doing it wrong. There's a new survey out, conducted by OnePoll on behalf of a company called Lilo.
Phrasing.
It's a sexual survey. 3 in 5 Americans say they've never experienced what we'll call climax with a partner. 3 in 5. This is 2,000, what they say, sexually active Americans surveyed. 3 in 5 of those 2,000 people have never experienced the joy with a partner. And have only reached what we'll call bliss in this case through, well, self-pleasure. Whoa. Whoa. 2 in 3 Americans also think that they are mind-blowing in bed and say that they've had their best, well, climax by themselves. Okay. 6 in 10 claim they would rather be by themselves when having sex than with a partner. Whoa. And I think that falls into the category of you're doing it wrong.
We're just going to stay out of this one.
Go ahead, stay out of it. Apparently a lot of people are staying out of it, at least with a partner. 545, 55 KRCD Talk Station. That's a shame. Bond Furniture and Design in downtown Loveland. Beautiful Bond Furniture. Beautiful downtown Loveland. They've been there for more than 80 years. It's a staple in the community. I mean, you're there, it's like, I think of Bond Furniture. I'm in downtown Loveland. I drive past it all the time. Nice people. And the people there are interior design. Yeah, apparently Chuck has been trying to wake up Jason to get in here to finish up traffic for the morning. Ah, poor guy. Is he okay, Joe? I mean, he just has allergies or some. Okay, good. I'm a little worried he's back there like with 104 fever or something like that. Anyhow, back over to the stack of stupid, and there's usually a naked person in it. They're usually from Florida. This is not the case in this one. This is Pennsylvania, where a windburn man was arrested after police said he broke into a Phillipsburg home, then took off all of his clothes and choked a woman.
As is tradition.
No, yeah, that's the way it works. Police dispatch about 11 o'clock in the evening, South 2nd Street, for a report of a young male yelling and screaming while walking a dog. Before they got there, police were told the male assaulted a woman and was damaging vehicles parked in the South 2nd Street. When they got there, this guy, Bainey, David Bainey, laying in the grass without any clothes on.
As is tradition.
He attempted to run away and, of course, was tased before being taken into custody. Police spoke to the woman who said he came to her door with his dog. The woman said she told him to leave and locked her screen door and main door, but he managed to gain access to the residence anyway. The woman said Bainey took off his clothes, pushed her to the ground, and proceeded to strangle her. Victim said Bainey told her that he could kill her before leaving the residence. According to the charges filed, investigation showed him that he damaged 3 vehicles by breaking the side passenger mirrors and damaged another one by hitting the windshield with a brick. He was also seen choking his dog and slamming it against the ground. Is that what they're calling it these days, Joe? You know, it doesn't say anything about him being whacked out of his gourd on drugs or alcohol. P- Police, Carroll Police Department released surveillance camera, and of course there's always surveillance camera these days, right? Stills of two people of interest in a recent break-in. According to Chief Brad Burke, says the male was completely naked in the photos from the 500 block of East 5th Street at a design business. According to the authorities, the individuals had been identified, but their names have not been released. Investigation into the alleged burglary ongoing. We'll give you more information when they get it. Now, why would you want to break in someplace naked? I guess that's the point of it being in the stack of stupid. Oh, you thinking the name of the rhino is stupid, Joe? Is that why you put this in here? Powell, Ohio, the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium has welcomed its newest addition to the park, a 4-year-old greater one-horned rhino named Brian. Spelled the proper way, too, with an I. Thank you, Joe. 3,500-pound male transported from the Center for Conservation of Tropical Ungulates in Florida. Woo is spoiling. Yeah, they do need to release him. And the two people awake right now that have seen Life of Brian and are Monty Python fans are now laughing with us. Now, this song reminds me of when I was a lad because they used to have paddling. Remember paddling in elementary school? If you're old enough to remember when they did have corporal punishment. I was paddled for no reason, actually a couple of times. One time some kid screamed in the bathroom, and because no one would fess up to it, the teacher paddled everybody. Okay, there's some justice for you. And then the other time I was supposed to be picked up by my mom. I had forgotten. I had gotten in the queue for the bus in the gym. And when I remembered my mom was going to pick me up, I just sort of got up and went heading for the door, and teacher pulled out a paddle and whacked me right there. No due process, just bam. And we go to Clewiston, Florida for this one. An elementary school principal in Florida now under investigation after the mom of a 6-year-old student said her daughter was paddled for damaging a computer. Mother recorded video of the alleged incident. 6-year-old student. Central Elementary School told authorities the school called April 13 saying her daughter had damaged a computer. She said the schools also mentioned paddling, but she didn't fully understand what that meant due to a language barrier. Went to the school later today to pay the $50 fee charged for damaging the computer, but she was instead taken to the principal's office with her daughter, Principal Melissa Carter, and school clerk Cecilia Self. Carter accused of paddling the 6-year-old in front of her mother. Whoa. Child's mom says she was too afraid to stop the beating because she's an undocumented immigrant. Uh-oh. She hid her cell phone in her purse and recorded to prove it had happened. She said, that speaking in Spanish, the girl's mother said, the hatred with which she hit my daughter, I mean, it was a hatred that really, I've never hit my daughter like she hit her. I've never hit her. I sacrificed my daughter so all the parents can realize what's happening at this school. Mom took her daughter to the doctor the same day to document the red marks and bruises caused by the paddling. Family's lawyer told the he works with undocumented immigrants, believes Carter could face aggravated battery charges, saying the child's terrified. She feels vulnerable. There's nothing she can do in the hands of adults who overpower her to treat her so brutally, savagely, and really sadistically. If you look at that video, the principal was sadistic. That's what the lawyer had to say. School district wouldn't comment on the incident. Its policy does not allow corporal punishment and, in fact, encourages procedures that do not demean students or violate their constitutional rights. Policy reads, quote, the superintendent shall designate sanctions for the infractions of rules excluding corporal punishment, close quote. Yeah, it's a situation where I wouldn't really mind being the plaintiff's lawyer in that case. 556, 55 KRC, the talk station. Got more to talk about, including, oh, your FBI, hard at work, rounding up and handcuffing people. Do you have a warrant by any chance? Sit down, shut up. We got that to talk about. Plus, we'll hear from Dan Hills on issue 3 coming up. Your phone calls are also welcome. I'll be right back after the news.
Mother's Day, when you need to know, Mom will keep you informed.
But, Mom, why?
It's because I said so, that's why.
On 55 KRC.
606, if it's about Care City Talk Station. It's election day. Get out and vote. And if you're going to vote, say no on issue three. You can say yes on one and two if you like. I think it's going to be helpful on some level insofar as corruption is concerned. But, wow, man, I'm not going to beat the dead horse again. We're going to let Dan Hills do that at the bottom of the hour. FOP President Dan Hills with a plea to vote no on issue three for so many reasons. And in the last hour, we highlighted, I think, the most important one that is going to impact everybody the most, and that's garbage collection. Every 2 weeks as opposed to every week. You can only imagine how bad that might get. Phone over here if you'd like to call 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phone. 1 hour from now, Jennifer Gross, Ohio State Representative from District 52, a conservative woman she is, supporter of House Bill 248. Which, well, curbs a lot of the authority that the, well, people may have over your life insofar as vaccines. It will allow Ohioans to decline a COVID-19 shot or any other vaccine because of religious reasons, medical reasons, or natural immunity, and also prevent discrimination against those who make that decision. So we're going to work through the walk through the intricacies of that with Jennifer Gross 1 hour from now. Followed by Congressman Steve Shabbat on the infrastructure bill that billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, both being borrowed. They're feds on track to borrow $1.some-odd trillion to cover the hole by the end of the year. A lot of it because of the COVID bills that were passed. Anyway, about Kamala being in town last week, we'll hear from him on that. Wanted to talk about buses. No word on the Brent Spence Bridge. Senior litigator with the Buckeye Institute, J.R. Carson, is going to join us at 8:05 to talk about that Franklin County, Ohio decision saying that, yeah, municipalities can continue to take money in taxes from your paycheck even though you don't work there anymore. That's on appeal, and I'm going to get, I think, some positive optimism from Jay that they're going to ultimately prevail. John Morris, building materials going way up. He's with the Ohio Valley Associated Builders and Contractors. We'll hear from him at 8:20. Followed by Secretary of State Frank LaRose, who's going to say, get out and vote. We'll also hear from Home Helpers Home Cares expert Kristen Worthington. Anyway, I had to bring this one up. I heard about it over the in the news driving in this morning, and it just made my mouth fall open. And we're going to talk to Judge Napolitano, at least I hope. We'll talk to Judge Napolitano about the egregious, what seems to me egregious violation of a Fourth Amendment unreasonable search and seizures in connection with Paul and Marilyn Huper. Own a place called Homer Inn and Spa. They woke up at 9 o'clock in the morning with a bit of a start. This happened at the end of April, April 28th. A dozen armed FBI agents kicked down their front door, actually put a hole in it. They did later promise to reimburse them for that. Kicked down their front door because they thought that Marilyn was one of the people who stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop. They got a picture. Wait till you hear about this. Anyway. Kenai-based radio host named Bob Burt interviewed him and got all this, and then like Laura Ingraham had him on her program last night. Anyway, they expressed alarm and shock. The guy came out of his bedroom, Paul. He was the first one. He was apparently laying in his bed reading emails at 9 o'clock in the morning. He heard this ruckus in the kitchen. He's like, okay. Walks around the corner, and there are 7 guns pointed at him and ultimately then his wife. He said, it was a little alarming when I turned around the corner. The first thing they did was start barking out commandments. I think he meant commands. They were handcuffed. And, of course, interrogated for the better part of 3 hours, ultimately released. It was a case of mistaken identity. They were in D.C. for the rally for President Trump. They said they didn't come close to the Capitol building. At least 100 yards from the Capitol was the closest they ever got. FBI was mostly interested in Marilyn because they did have a photo of a woman who wore the same type of coat as her, had a similar hairstyle, and might I point out, the hairstyle is far from unusual. Photo taken from Capitol Building cameras, according to Marilyn, beyond the hair and coat, she claimed no similarity between her and the woman photographed at the Capitol. Paul said he repeatedly, and this is what irks me, repeatedly asked to see a search warrant, was denied until 2.5 hours had gone by. And during that time, he was separated from his wife. So they break in, guns drawn, handcuff him, put him in a corner, and don't show him a search warrant. Nothing. He said, we sat there really for the first hour not knowing what was going on. They never offered for us to be comfortable. It was very harshly done. He said they then began ransacking the house. They did kick a huge hole in the door. Again, they offered to replace that. He thought the whole thing was rather confusing. I know I'm innocent. I don't know what they're really basically looking for. And he was really wondering. And he felt bad. And this was the point that came through in the reporting from the Alaska Watchman was where I got this. They felt bad that they weren't more aware of their constitutional rights while all this was going on. And that they were going to start working harder to become more familiar with the rights that they have. And I'm certain that their lawyer probably will have informed them of when they initiate their civil rights violation lawsuit. After more than an hour, the agents finally explained that the reason they were handcuffed, locked up in their own house was because of the January 6th siege of the U.S. Capitol. They wanted to know where Nancy Pelosi's laptop was. The Ubers were in Washington, D.C., but again, peacefully protesting. He said, that's what we were there for. Agents showed Paul, the guy, the husband, the photo of a woman who did enter the Capitol and asked if that was his wife. He said, well, they had the same coat on, but my wife was much better looking than that woman, he said. They were separated again, as I mentioned before. Marilyn explained that they told her why they were at their house in handcuffs. She said, well, we're here for Nancy Pelosi's laptop. She recalled, so she then she's being interviewed. She goes, so I guess it was stolen and it is still at large. Think about that. The agents claimed that they had positively identified Marilyn as being in the Capitol building and that they wanted to know who she was working with. She said she couldn't help but laugh. She was trying to be respectful. She asked to see some identification. She goes, at which point the agents quickly flashed their badges. She goes, I couldn't read it fast enough to know what it was. She asked to see a warrant, was told that she would get to see it later. Repeatedly said, told that she was the woman in the photo, she responded by saying, I would like to know how I split myself into two locations because I didn't know I had this power. Now, this is interesting, and here you go. You get into the shenanigan component of it, beyond them just kicking the door in and not telling them what their rights are. The photo they showed her at first was fuzzy, and it did show a woman wearing a similar coat with a similar hairstyle. Later, they showed her a photo of the woman's face, and she said, oh, well, that's obviously not me. Why didn't you show me that photo to start with? She said the woman in the photo has detached earlobes. Marilyn's are attached, she said. Plus, the woman was wearing a sweater that Marilyn said, you couldn't pay me to wear. Agents, suggested that she was lying and not cooperating. At no point was the couple read the Miranda rights or charged with a crime. Agents left after 3 hours, no apology. They also took Marilyn's phones and laptops. I also understand they had house guests in. When I heard the interview with Laura Ingram, that's not reported in the Alaska Watchman, but they had house guests, including, I guess, a 17-year-old kid. FBI put them in handcuffs, too. Nothing to do with it. They didn't have photographs or what they thought were photographs of their house guests. America. You see how much effort the FBI is going through, you know, in connection with the January 6th riots. Does anybody have any belief at all that the FBI is looking into all of the people who literally burned buildings down to the ground during the riots last year, who did $1 billion worth of damage to the country?
No.
Thanks, Dad. It was a rhetorical question, Dad. Your wellness center, here's the phone number here for you. I'd like to call 791-94. Chuck's all right. He's just struggling with his voice this morning. A bit of allergy issue or something like that. But we check on him every once in a while to keep him locked up in the back room with his computer screens. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phone. Yes, the information is in. This is good. To all you people screaming voter suppression, you know you're wrong, and you know you're making it up, and we now have facts to prove it. Before I launch into this interesting breakdown for the Wall Street Journal this morning, I see the Tennessee legislature has passed a bill requiring absentee ballots that have a watermark, a special watermark. Got to hold the piece of paper, the ballot, up to the light to see that that is imprinted in there. That will ensure the voter integrity. You know what it passed? How it passed? Passed the Senate. It's called the Tennessee Election Integrity Act. 27-0. And it passed the House 92-1. Goes into effect January of next year. Governor Bill Lee, if he signs it, and I guess there's every expectation he will, given the veto-proof majority they've got. According to the bill summary, under present law, signature verification is the final verification. That's it, before the board counts it. Under the amendment, the signature verification remains part of the process, but it will not be final. The final is when you look at it, making sure there's a watermark, and any ballot that does not contain a watermark will be rejected. And I like this. Representative Antonio Parkinson, Democrat, had this to say: Democrats are for secure elections. Let me say that again. Contrary to the messaging that goes on from whoever sends it out, Democrats are for secure elections. This is a good bill, a very good bill, and I want to thank you for bringing it. There you go. Now, on to the voter suppression that wasn't. Editorial board of the Journal pointing out that Kamala Harris last fall said, we have classic voter suppression. Now we have census data, though, to prove that she was wrong. Census figures released Thursday show that voter turnout in 2020 was near a record historic high for any presidential election. The record happened actually in 1992. This was a 0.9%, slightly less, almost 1% less than the 92 record. But anyway, 66.8% of voting age citizens cast a ballot last November. Turnout 5.4% higher than 2016, 3.2% more than 2008 when Barack Obama caused a whole lot of people to head off to the polls. Hispanic vote 53.7%, Asian vote 59.7%. Black voting surpassed any presidential year with the exception of 2008 and 2012. 62.6% of the black people voted. And here's where the rubber meets the road for all the people who are claiming that the people who are looking for voter integrity are actually trying to disenfranchise someone. GOP states with stricter voting rules did not experience a significantly lower minority turnout. Black turnout highest in the state of Maryland at 75.3%. Mississippi next. The lowest at 36.4% of the black population voting. Massachusetts. How long has Massachusetts been run by Democrats? Of course, liberals have been going after Georgia for purging voters and restricting ballot access. Georgia had a smaller black-white voting gap than Illinois, Democrat, New Jersey, Democrat, Virginia, I believe, Democrat, and California, of course, Democrat. All Democrats. State with the biggest black-white voting gap, Massachusetts, Oregon, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Colorado. Three of those states allow same-day voter registration. That'd be Wisconsin, Iowa, and Colorado. They say, good luck trying to discern a link between a state's voting rules, partisan control, and minority turnout. And then this fun fact. Perhaps, they say, no state has done more to make it easier to vote than California. It allows same-day registration, ballot harvesting, and out-of-precinct voting. Arizona doesn't allow anything like that. None of those policies, yet it had a higher turnout among all minority groups and smaller voting disparities than in the state of California. California, the model for all leftists. They cannot use that to support their theories, their ideology, their Barbara Streisand pile of excrement that suggests these voting rules are designed to somehow disenfranchise my equally intelligent black friends out there. Democrats, they say no, their complaints are false, but they repeat them to energize apathetic voters. All right, why did people not show up in November? They did a survey on that too. 17.6 just weren't interested. 14.5% said they didn't like the candidates or the campaign issues. 13.1% said they were too busy, they had a conflict in their schedule. 13% forgot. A couple of percentage points, 2.6, said it was an inconvenient polling place, which I'll pause and say, for those who are aware of an upcoming election, I think all the states allow some form of early voting. And finally, registration problems, 4.9%. The differences across racial groups in terms of why people didn't vote, small. In other words, there was no impediment. The law was not too difficult to comply with. I wasn't disenfranchised because of the color of my skin. Because, of course, I can figure out how to vote just like anybody else out there. I just got to pay attention to what day it is, I guess. 626 coming up on 627. No on issue 3, says FOP President Dan Hills will be on next to talk about that. I want to mention Cullen Electric. Cullen Electric, wonderful electricians. They are great at what they do. Had them over my house the other day. Yep, I bought a new chandelier and went to put it in, and it didn't work. And I know how to wire two wires together. I know how to hang a chandelier. I've done it before, but it didn't work. And I was like puzzling. Till my puzzler was sore, called Cullen Electric. They fortunately had a slot available that afternoon. They were in the neighborhood, came over. Hey, they found a replacement for him, if you just tuning in. Chuck was barely able to make it through the traffic there this morning. So, anyhow, we wish him the best of luck. And Brian Thomas is always happy to bring to the 55 KRC Morning Show FOP President Dan Hills. It's FOP Chapter 69, that'll be the Cincinnati Police Department. And Dan's a little concerned about today. It is Election Day, Dan. And I know you have a word or two on Issue 3. Welcome back, my friend. Last opportunity.
Thanks, Brian. I got a little bit of the Chuck thing going on with my allergies, but I hope I don't sound near as bad as he was.
Oh, no, you sound 100% compared to Chuck. I don't know if you heard him earlier. I mean, he could barely get a sentence out, so.
That's what Joe was telling me. Yep, today's the last day, Brian, that we can talk about it. Today's the day that it matters, and today's the day that we find out, you know, yes, Cincinnati votes Democratic, but I think there's a big difference between Democratic and far-left wokeness. So let's hope that Cincinnati is not Portland. Let's hope it's not Seattle or San Francisco or New York. Let's hope that there's enough common sense left here in the Queen City, and it's common sense values instead of saying conservative values, and that we want to protect law and order, our police, but also our fire department, garbage collection, and all the other city departments that will be affected if all of a sudden you take a great big chunk out of the budget and send it to really God knows where with this affordable housing issue, which most people think will do little overall for affordable housing, but will do a lot to line a lot of people's pockets.
Well, we can't say what it'll do for affordable housing because the people that are going to be in charge of the money, first off, the committee, I don't think has been put together yet. Second off, they haven't articulated any specific proposals. They just want the money, and then they'll get around to deciding where or how it's going to be spent, and you and I will have no say over it because it is an unelected group of a committee for affordable housing. I guess... This, you started off talking about this isn't a Republican Democrat thing. I don't know how anybody could say it is. Everybody has come out against it, Republicans and Democrats alike. It's only this core group of activists who I would argue probably don't even consider themselves Democrats in the true sense. They're more socialist, self-professed socialist, maybe even communist. I don't know. But it is the far left wing of the Democrat Party that ends up pursuing things like this, like defunding the police, which many people are arguing issue 3 is merely a veiled way of taking money away from the police department.
Yeah, I believe that very much so, that it is, they're flanking us in a sense. Instead of coming straight forward and telling everybody what they're about, which is to fund the police, they're kind of flanking us. But there's a big thing of greed in this too, as you know. Uh-huh. As you know, socialists proclaim they want to share money with everybody, unless you're at the top rung of their elites. And of course, they're doing everything they can to line their pockets and
well,
and
if you,
live as well as can be.
Well, let us put just a little more flesh on the bones of that statement, and I've brought this up many times. There will be not-for-profit organizations out there that will be having that will have their hand out for a chunk of this $50 million every year. These not-for-profit organizations will claim to have all the ideas in the world to solve the problem of affordable housing, and they will have employees, Dan. And those employees, quite often, when you're at a not-for-profit, are paid handsomely. That's
especially at their CEO level.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean,
you can look through all the nonprofits, and I know there's some different reports on those, and you have the ones that are, you know, very honorable, such as the St. Jude's Hospital, where almost everybody involved is doing it out of the goodness of their heart, and you have other charities that are just nothing but, like you said, they're
six-figure salaries.
Yeah, they're nothing but scams for a lot of people to get six. Maybe sometimes even more figure salaries as being the head or the CEO of these.
I think of the Clinton Foundation when I think of this, Dan, because all that money that went to the Clinton Foundation, apparently only 5% actually went out into the world to do charitable works. The rest of it was just to, I guess, employ family members and friends and relatives and acquaintances. I don't know. But that's the point. If you got the money, you want it to get to those that are in need of it. And this vehicle, because there's no threat of the funds drying up, there's no accountability. And I think that, to me, fundamentally is wrong with it. It mandates the money go to this particular committee. There's no flexibility. It must go. You get even more when inflation goes up because it's going up. So what about results? It's not result-driven. It's upfront allocation without any obligation. They deliver on what they promise to do.
And in the meantime, how will they affect these other city services? And for me specifically, as I speak about law enforcement, Brian, it'll do more than just affect the city. The Cincinnati Police Department works in partnership with agencies all around the area, and the city of Cincinnati's police department is leaned on for many different things.
Yeah.
People come to us for forensic expertise, fingerprints, DNA, and those things. Our crime scene people are the best. They're the best in the state. They might be the best in the country. SWAT are also our civil defense response team. Yeah. You know, the people who handled the riots so well in 2020, they've been borrowed by Dayton. They've been borrowed by the University of Cincinnati. Our canine unit, you name it, we get used a lot. Our homicide unit, all these units will be affected if, our dollars get pinched that badly by this thing. So it won't only be city voters affected. It'll be the region will be affected.
It absolutely affects the region, and on more levels than that. We'll pause for a moment. We'll bring Dan back and talk a little bit more about the ripple effects of a yes on issue. It's 6:42 here on this election day, primary day, and more fundamentally, when the rubber meets the road, whether or not you're going to vote yes or no on issue three. And we are just pleading with folks who are able to vote in the city of Cincinnati election, eligible and going to vote, to please vote no on three. This is a nonpartisan plea. Whatever your desire is from government, including related to affordable housing, you want it to work, okay? And maybe you want money for the Center for Closing the Health Gap. Maybe you want the police force to be funded at the same level it is. You want your fire department to not have to close their buildings or do brownouts, which is what's predicted. You want your trash picked up every week as opposed to every 2 weeks. And Dan Hills, FOP president, is on the phone echoing this and putting exclamation points on it. You talked about shared services, and that's something I don't think you and I have talked about. The Sheriff's Department and the Cincinnati Police Department and other law enforcement agencies work together all the time. Not every law enforcement agency can have a SWAT team or a bomb-sniffing dog or the underwater diving experts, Dan, and that's the kind of stuff that's going to get trimmed. Am I right?
Oh, very much so. And you're right. Not everybody can have those type of units and experts in those type of units. I did a very short time and wasn't, nearing what I would consider an expert in a unit called personal crimes, where we did investigations of sex crimes and crimes against children. And sometimes the nature of those crimes is we would start investigating an allegation, and we would find out that it happened in one of the other jurisdictions here in Hamilton County. And the prosecutor's office, once we contacted them, said, look, this is actually, we thought it happened in one of our neighborhoods. It turned out it happened. They would say, would you just please stay with the investigation? Because they would know that those smaller, burgs outside of the city of Cincinnati didn't have somebody that was familiar with those type of investigations.
Yeah, like computer forensics experts, right? People who can, get on the internet and discover and track people down and find them that way. I mean, that's specialized work they do over in that unit.
Yeah, there, and our fraud with the banking stuff and everything. I mean, there's investigators, and this is by no means bad-mouthing the small departments. They have very well-rounded folks that do, multiple types of investigations. But when you're talking about a homicide or a rape or some of the top fraud cases, it's great that they can, work with, get advice from, if not the sheriff's office, the Cincinnati Police Department, and that happens on a daily basis. And so when Cincinnati police start getting squeezed down in their other assignments and have to rely on just the street people to do the very basic services and nothing else, but it'll affect the city first and foremost as far as its safety and security, but it'll also start to face out in the county. And that's where, back to today's vote, if you're listening right now and you live in Green Township or Anderson Township or whatever, but you have a sister or a cousin or a friend that lives in the city, it may be worth to pick up that phone.
Because, it is worth it.
Because there's such a small group that come out for these mayoral primaries, and because I believe that it's going to be very, very close. I think that we've done a good job. Speaking of partnerships, the fire department union they have put in a good sum of money towards advertising. I've seen some of their advertising on TV. The police department, our union, the FOP, has actually worked in partnership with the chief of police and featured him in some Facebook commercials that are targeted for the city of Cincinnati. So I think we've done a good job. But, of course, the other side's going to get their people out, too. But this is one of those crazy elections that, wouldn't shock me if it came down to a couple hundred votes or less.
I know.
The difference in this thing. So call your sister, your brother, your uncle, your aunt, whoever that lives in the city and say, hey, I don't know if you remember, but today is that crazy mayoral primary. Get out there, vote no on three. The FOP, we like David Mann. We think he's the best. Speaking of not being about Democrat or Republican or whatever, I think David's just an old school Democrat. He's not one of these woke far leftists that would support something like issue three.
Right, and there are a few of the mayoral candidates are in favor of issue three, and they're people who are not experienced in running a city. I mean, again, I keep going back to the lack of flexibility that is built into this charter amendment. There is no flexibility, and without flexibility, I mean, there is no penalty, and that's where I go back to whatever this group decides to do with the money is not going to obligate them to prove some kind of result. They're going to get their money regardless of whether they actually do anything on behalf of affordable housing. And then, I have to ask you before we part company today, Dan Hills, FOP president for the Cincinnati Police Department. I keep reading more and more articles, and not shockingly, about attrition rates, people retiring early. We've seen some really precipitous drops in the number of law enforcement officers in certainly cities that have defunded their police department. But what about the city of Cincinnati? I know we've talked previously about, people taking early retirement, going with drop. But how do you perceive that a yes vote on issue three will impact police morale, if at all, and will it change anything with regard to attrition rates or people's internally, how they feel about the city and their job?
Well, yeah, I mean, it'll be just another punch in the gut, frankly. We see that police across this country are being micromanaged like never before, being Monday morning quarterback like never before. And sometimes they're just flat out being, accused of the worst of the worst when they're doing the opposite, such as the Columbus officer who acted heroically and very, very, very quickly to save a life. And then he's being thrown under the bus and being called a murderer by super sports stars and Hollywood idiots are calling this gentleman out. I I spoke out back when the thing happened in Atlanta with the officer that defended himself when his taser got stolen, was being used against him. He's been indicted.
Yeah.
You know, this is crazy times. And, you know, normally I want to tell everybody what a great career it is and all those things. But, yeah, we do have questions about where we go from here. And open efforts to defund us is, yes, an additional punch in the gut, big time.
Well, there's that. And then also let us not forget the activities in Columbus where they're considering, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere under the current makeup of the House and Senate, but, you know, the idea of getting rid of your qualified immunity. I mean, if you're going to be held personally responsible for your actions in connection with your work and the dangerous nature of your work and all of the second-guessing and question marks that can come into that, honestly, I don't know how you'd get anybody to go into law enforcement, Dan.
Yeah, to lose your pension, to lose your house, to lose everything. Because, like you said, everybody will be suing police officers every time they get arrested.
There'll be a cottage industry with the plaintiff's bar. Trust me.
No doubt about it.
Trust me on that one, man. A litigation attorney for far too many years to not see trends. And usually it's the plaintiff's bar that's behind efforts like this, too, because it generates work for them. And let's face it, you're the city of Cincinnati, and you got all these, you know, lawsuits just piling up because people make claims, and you're going to have to defend them. It's probably easier, to write a settlement check than rather to go through the unbelievably horrific cost of litigation. Dan Hills, thank you so much for spending time with my listeners and giving your final thoughts on Issue 3. And Dan and I and Mayor Cranley, the Charterites, the Democrats, the Republicans, everyone uniformly says no for a whole bunch of reasons. And let's all agree, Dan, that picking up trash every week as opposed to every 2 weeks is not a partisan thing.
No, it's not a partisan thing because after a while that stuff stinks, especially in July.
It does, and it draws vermin, rats, all that. And it's, yeah, okay. Well, Dan, let's keep our fingers crossed. You and I will talk again real soon, and best of health. We'll talk.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Take care, my friend. 651 at 55 KRC, the talk station, executive transfer. It's 7:06 at 55 KRC Talk Station, and a very happy Tuesday to you. It is Election Day, and please, 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 if you're out there in the city of Cincinnati, imploring you to vote no on Issue 3, maybe yes on 1 and 2, and of course, my support for David Mann, along with you heard Dan Hills earlier. David Mann's a good man and the right man for the job, considering what we're heading to in November. Without further ado, though, I've been telling you all morning, and I'm so pleased to welcome her back to the 55 KRC Morning Show, representing Westchester Township, Liberty Township, Fairfield Township, and a good chunk of Sharonville. That will be Ohio State Representative District 52, Jennifer Gross. Welcome back to the program. It's good to have you on today.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
I am so pleased that you're and let me thank you first off for my listeners that aren't familiar with your background. 21-year U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, so I always like to thank service members for their service to our country, so I truly appreciate that. But more fundamentally, in your background today, it's really important that you have a medical-based background. You're a family nurse practitioner for more than 16 years, a registered nurse for more than 30 years. I married a nurse, by the way, who turned into a lawyer.
Hey, smart man.
Well, thank you. That's exactly the Thomases didn't raise any ignorant children. And I tell you, my children, my wife and my children are alive, I think, because my wife had a nursing background. Anyway, we got to meet in law school, but that's immaterial. But you have this, you're registered for more than 30 years, and you also worked in corporate at Eli Lilly, so you understand pharmaceuticals. Now, is that background what led you, freedom-loving person that you are, to support House Bill 248? Let my listeners know exactly what 248 does.
248, first of all, we're at the sub-bill now, so we have a substitute bill. But the original bill provided a guaranteed, unquestioned exemption for every citizen to vaccinations, any vaccines that were made mandatory by any public or private entity without question, without discrimination. And now, that it does not change that our daycares, preschools, K-12, public, private, that we still have a law that requires them to say that they either have a religious, a conscientious, or a medical exemption. We already have a law like that.
Right. No, that's why I wanted to emphasize that to my listeners, because students already enjoy the protection that you are seeking on behalf of everyone else, it seems.
Correct, and that's only K-12. So college students are currently being told you must be vaccinated for COVID-19 in order to go back. Certain universities, like Cleveland State, for instance.
Well, I guess I'm wondering why the support would run to children. Clearly, you know, parents have a tremendous amount of say in what children do and cannot do, and of course have a lot of say and influence over perhaps their religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. But adults, we carry the same rights and privileges as to ourselves. I'm just wondering how it is that this law that protects the children in the same fashion you want adults to be protected ended up on the books and it didn't extend to everyone in the state of Ohio.
I think, Brian, you brought me here because I'm freedom loving. And what I would tell you is that we never thought it would be necessary. Now, why would we expect that employers would be mandating and literally threatening and coercing people to get a vaccine that is experimental, by the way?
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. It was it approved under the emergency provisions with the FDA. It has not gone through the full rigor. And whether you're not, and I know there are people out there going, well, the FDA just takes too long anyway. Well, fine. But still, it was approved fast-tracked under an exception to the general rules regarding efficacy and testing, right?
Correct. And, you know, I believe in science. I believe in healthcare. Actually, my entire family got the flu shot this year. I'm shocked at the number of people who don't get the flu shot. You're going to hear that I'm an anti-vaxxer. That is absolutely not true. And one thing you didn't mention was that I actually was a sub-investigator for the Moderna vaccine as well as the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. You know, I'm pro-science, but I am more than anything else, and this bill is more than anything else. It is pro-freedom.
Well, it is.
You shouldn't have the bill. I shouldn't even have to be talking to you today about this bill.
I understand that. That's why I am perplexed, or expressing my sort of, you know, being perplexed over the whole concept that we're here. But I can back off from this and my belief, and I support what you're saying and doing here, but it is driven by the logic and understanding that because we have a vaccine and people are free to go ahead and decide whether or not to take it or not, it apparently works. So this idea that I have to protect you from getting a disease when you have it within your ability and capacity now, because anyone eligible can get the vaccine, that you should go ahead and get the vaccine and it shouldn't be somebody else that has to protect you from it.
Exactly. And it shouldn't be coerced either. I have 14 employers, I mean, evidence of thousands of employees that are being coerced and threatened with their jobs if they do not get the vaccine.
What? Can you imagine if that happened every year for the flu vaccine, that you were subject to potentially losing your situation because you didn't get this year's version of what could be the wrong selection for the flu virus? Or flu
vaccine? Brian, what a wonderful comment, because part of the reason I believe we're here, and this is not a referendum against healthcare in general, because I always get the flu shot.
But yeah, I usually do too.
Our healthcare workers have been pressured at the very least, and sometimes told you will have to wear a mask if you do not get the vaccine. So a little bit of discrimination there, and they have been forced to get the flu shot since about 2013 in Ohio. Well, so we're pushing toward now why the outcry is now all of a sudden we're outside of the healthcare community and we're saying everyone's going to be forced to get this vaccine for a disease that arguably for the majority of the population is survivable by 99%.
Yeah, and I'm one of those that did, and I always am quick to point out I believe in COVID-19 because I got it and I got a bad case of it. I was laid up for 6 weeks. I think it was primarily because I have an underlying low-spectrum lymphoma diagnosis, and I was getting treatment for that. So my immune system was weakened, and that makes sense. I'm in a comorbid category, so it makes sense that I would have a worse case. But you know, I still appreciate all these freedoms, and I'm not looking for anyone to, you know, sort of protect me against myself. And let me go back to the mask mandate. We are learning more and more that they really don't do anything. Jennifer Gross, I mean, doesn't there have to be sort of some reliable science to point to if an employer is going to say, you know, you have to do this or you're going to be fired, or anybody can say that? 'Cause
yes, it's
evidence-based.
Yes, evidence-based science. I started my PhD in research at UC. I really believe in research and the science, but the science doesn't pan out. And unfortunately, right. when our healthcare community tries to stand up, they get canceled or they get accused of being, you know, crazy or something. But right. can I tell you how many times we double masked in healthcare in my geez. Over 30 years?
Never.
Never.
Right, because Ever. It's stupid.
So, yeah, I mean, it is about, honestly, it's about freedom. It's about no passports. It's about, do you know how to make your own choices? It's about responsible government. You talk about this all the time, Brian. Responsible government provides freedom for the people. And I hope this is the third time you've had me on, and every single time, in every single conversation, it really was about freedom. And I will always be that freedom fighter. Yes. I would like to, if it's okay, I would like anybody who wants to learn about the bill, more details, to go to vote yes on HB248.com to learn about the bill. I also, at my office, would like people to write and send me evidence of being coerced, wherever that looks like, colleges, employers. We're collecting evidence as we get ready to do sponsor testimony for this bill, hopefully Tuesday. And we are Good. Waiting on the health committee chair to bring that up.
You are a Republican. You have run as a representative of the Republican Party, endorsed and elected as such. And I know Governor DeWine claims to be a Republican as well, but I'm almost reluctant to ask this question. Jennifer, will he even sign that into law if it passes?
You know, since Governor DeWine has stated many times that he does not have any plans to make the COVID-19 vaccine mandatory, he doesn't plan to have a government passport. You know, this bill has no effect on his powers. However, I do hope that he'll maintain his word and not allow vaccine passports. Another thing that would be prudent for a Republican governor would be to possibly follow in the footsteps of Governor DeSantis in Florida and issue an executive order that says no employer can coerce an employee while we take the time, because we have, as you well know, Brian, a country where law takes time. We don't have knee-jerk reaction right. laws. It has to go through the vetting process. And it would be wonderful to have our governor stand up and say, I am protecting the freedoms of all Ohioans. I want you to get the vaccine. He can say everything.
Of course.
He can even give them bonuses or money or whatever he wants to do. But to protect freedom, to protect all Ohioans, or, you know, I'm afraid they may leave Ohio.
Well, they leave Ohio. I just imagine that. I mean, think about the situation. You got an employer, you have someone, an employee who's been at the job for a long time, making a decent living, supporting his or her family. Everything's all right with the world. But they've got a problem, a religious issue with, and people can make fun of religion if they want, in terms of whether it's right or wrong, to think it's wrong to have something invade your body in the form of vaccine. Go ahead, have that discussion. But it's their deeply held belief system we're talking about here. And if that's what yep. they've got, they could be out of a job and put on the public dole, get unemployment, because an employer will not allow them to not get a vaccine. It's just a recipe for disaster.
Brian, I have an actual case of that in Washington courthouse. A gal worked for 10 years for a nursing home facility, and she was required to drive 1 hour each way twice a week because she refused to get the vaccine. And she said, I am a single mom. I can't possibly come on my days off. I'm also going to school. I can't do this. After 10 years of being a faithful employee, you either get the shot or you're going to be discriminated against.
Wow.
She works in a COVID unit. She's never gotten COVID. So you know, I'm speechless. I'm sorry.
I understand that. I know where that comes from, Jennifer. It's tough. It's tough in my position to get speechless over something, considering
I
got a radio program.
Know.
All right, before we part company, I got a guest on later in the program. His name is J.R. Carson, senior litigator with the Buckeye Institute, and he's going to be on talking about this case that a Franklin County judge ruled against the employees who merely wanted their computer income tax back. Jennifer, we're all going to be facing this. The city of Cincinnati is going to be facing it. They continue to take out employee taxes for the city services. People are working at home. They're not working down. They're not working within the city limits anymore. And that was the situation in Franklin County. The judge, however, said that, well, the Ohio General Assembly governs municipal taxation, and they passed, what, House Bill 197, which allows them to continue collecting taxes until Governor DeWine rescinds his state of emergency declaration. When is that going to happen? Because I find this to be fundamentally unfair, and I think they're going to win on appeal, and municipalities are going to be writing checks back to these people. Your thoughts?
SB 22 should take care of that, and we will be changing. Everything will change on June 23rd when we get our resolution submitted to the governor, and it should change. Now, I'm not an expert in tax law. We have discussed this in caucus. And so we understand, we also, you know, we see both sides of it. So I don't want to get myself into trouble.
I understand.
But I will say that it is an issue. I would encourage people to contact the representatives when they have an opinion one way or another. You know, one of the things about, I'm sorry to be political, but one of the things about electing Democrats is that, you know, when you live in a big Democrat place, those are the people that are representing you. So I encourage you to reach out to the people that represent you and say, this is really what I want. I personally do. I read almost every one of the letters that get to me. I haven't been able to respond, but I really, that's why I do this bill.
Yeah.
So wait till you hear what's coming next from me. But
ooh,
anyway,
little teaser from Jennifer Gross.
I listen. I mean, the title representative means that you represent. And I didn't go after this bill. This bill found me, HB 248. Representing the freedom of the people and representing the people is why I ran. I by definition, now I'm elected, so I'm a politician, but I was never a politician before now.
Nope.
And when you listen, you listen.
You speak from wisdom and authority. You've been in the medical business your entire life. Just happened now to end up being the representative for my friends in Westchester and the general area, Ohio State Representative for District 52, Jennifer Gross, a defender of freedom. I wish you the best of luck in getting this through, and I'd like to think Governor DeWine will actually sign it, the Vaccine Choice and Anti-Discrimination Act. Jennifer, I can't wait, since you teased it, to find out what you're up to next. You're always welcome on the program.
You'll like it. You'll like it,
I'm Brian. Sure I will. Jennifer, we'll talk soon.
Take care. Have a wonderful day.
You too, and stay well. 721 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. USA Insulation, the ultimate no-brainer product. For your under-insulated home, you got to call USA Insulation. They give you a free quote. Won't take them long to do that. And take them up on it. It's $99 a month, interest-free. I don't know what the total amount's going to be, because your house is different from anybody other houses, but $99 a month. You may save that much on your energy. It's 729, 55KRC, the talk station. Happy Tuesday. Big Tuesday, too. Geez, thank you, Joe Strecker. What a wonderful lineup. Gave me a little fair warning yesterday. He said, got a lot of folks on tomorrow, so make sure you're tight on time. I don't know that I'm doing so well on that, but we spoke with Dan Hills early in the program, 6:30. Please, 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 imploring you, no on issue 3 for so many reasons they're almost impossible to count. Republicans, Democrats, independents, charter rights, everyone agrees, with the exception of the activists who are going to get the money, that it is going to be a really bad thing for the city of Cincinnati. Go ahead and think about garbage collection only coming once every 2 weeks. Just that and of itself is a reason to say no on it. Anyway, Jennifer Gross was just on. Well, I really enjoy talking to her. She has got her act together. Congressman Shabbat coming up at 7:40 about the infrastructure bill, Kamala Harris being in town. And then after the top of the hour, and if you were just listening to Jennifer Gross, you heard me mention that Jay Carson is going to be on the program. He's with the Buckeye Institute, one of their senior litigators. We're going to find out what he thinks his hopes are on appeal, since the Franklin County judge chucked the case. The case, of course, brought by taxpayers who work in the city limits normally but aren't working in there because of COVID. They still have their taxes being taken out. Earnings tax, much like it is in the city of Cincinnati. And that's because the House, or rather the Columbus, they passed a law that allowed the municipalities to continue doing this until Governor DeWine says no more state of emergency. Now, these cities have a big train wreck on their hands. At some point, the state of emergency is going to be over, and they can convince Governor DeWine to continue putting it, keeping it in place as long as they can try. But at some point, it's going to end, and a lot of people aren't going to be working within the city limits anymore. That's a force to be reckoned with, and I think they're actually going to win on this case on appeal. I can't come up with a reason that makes any sense to allow a municipality that you have no connection with anymore to continue to collect taxes from your paycheck. John Morris is going to talk to us. He's with the Ohio Valley Associated Builders and Contractors. He's been on a bunch of times over the years. And today we will be discussing the cost of building materials. Whoa. And if you've been looking into getting a project done, I hope you are very aware of how expensive building materials have gotten. We'll get some insight from John and how it's impacting the industry. Frank LaRose, Secretary of State, to remind you to get out and vote today. He'll join the program in an hour. And our Ask the Expert, Home Helpers Home Care, Kristen Worthington's going to speak with us at 8:50. In the meantime, back to local stories. Kroger, if you're in downtown Cincinnati or in the Cincinnati, greater Cincinnati area, you're not going to have single-use plastic bags anymore beginning June 1st. Blah. They voted on this plastic bag ban. The city council did, so you know who to blame. And it was supposed to kick in the 1st of January of this year. But, you know, because of COVID and everything, we need plastic bags. So they delayed it until June 1st. I guess the city of Cincinnati, in its infinite wisdom, decided that plastic bags were a good thing because, you know, other people's fingers and things won't be on them. But when you start going with your reuse bags, let me just warn you ahead of time, you better do a really great job of laundering them and disinfecting them in between uses. Anyhow, there was a shooting this morning over the Rhine. It happened about 1:30 in the morning on Walnut Street at 13th Street. Police arrived on the scene, found two men shot. One man pronounced dead at the scene. The other one transported to UC Medical Center with non-life-threatening injuries. We don't have any updates as of right now. We'll give you some if it shows up during the morning show. But I'm guessing if you have any information about that shooting, the police would love to hear from you. In other Kroger-related news, they're going to start delivering with drones. At least testing it. Kroger Marketplace store in Centerville between Cincinnati and Dayton. Flights will be managed by licensed pilots with Kroger's partner called Drone Express. And Joe Strecker and I were sort of waxing poetic about how awesome this would be. I had this vision of, you know, Joe sitting out on his back porch enjoying a nice cold one. He looks down and is like, dang, I'm out of beer. Pull out your cell phone, get out to your Kroger. I need a 12-pack of fill-in-the-blank, and that little drone just comes flying over to your backyard, drops it off, and flies away. You've already paid for it. Yeah, I would see that it would work along those lines. Anyway, it's coming to a theater near you regardless of whether you want it. I just think this drone technology. I don't know. It's like satellites. They're now getting complaints about the satellites that are circling the globe, and there are so many of them that they're now obstructing the astronomers' vision of the stars and the planets and things. You know, with ground-based telescopes, they're causing a decrease in light. It's like light pollution. When you get closer to you get to the city, the less you can see the sky. It's that kind of phenomena, but it's due to the blocking. There's so many satellites up there. And can't you just, you know, imagine, look out the sky, and every business out there that delivers anything has got its own drone. What it's going to look like out there? There's drones flying all over the place like a swarm of cicadas. Anyhow. Oh, by the way, it's primary day today. You're going to be choosing mayoral candidates. You're going to have two to choose from in November. Today's the day you get to whittle it down. Your choices, Gabby Begtrip, David Mann, Herman Najoli, Raffle Prophet, Aftab Purival, and Cecil Thomas. We're all David Mann folks here in this 55 KRC morning show, not because we share political ideology, but we're worried about what's going to happen here in the fall, in November and forward, particularly given issue 3. If it passes, it is going to be a real hand tire in terms of this new council and the new mayor and how they run the city. On the ballot elsewhere, Hamilton County, Harrison, you got a Republican primary. Silverton, you have a Democratic primary and tax levy. Deer Park, you got a tax levy to vote on. North College Hill, a tax levy. Indian Hill School Districts, a bond issue and a tax levy. Winton Woods School District has a tax levy. Over in Warren County, we have Bellbrook, Sugar Creek School District tax levy. Lebanon City School District tax levy. Springboro Community City School District tax levy. Xenia Community City School District bond issue and tax levy. Butler, you've got a College Corner School District tax levy. Preble Shawnee School District tax levy. My friends in Claremont County have a Bethel Tate School District tax levy. That's about all I got, and I'll appreciate Alexander Coolidge and Scott Wartman from the Enquirer for giving us that information. Get out and vote. 7:35 right now, I think a man who will share that sentiment, Congressman Steve Shabbat, to talk infrastructure, among other things, coming up next. First, a word for my friend, Peter Chabrie. He is my friend. He's a good guy. At 55 KRCD Talk Station, and a very happy Tuesday to you. Made even better because we get to talk to Congressman Steve Shabbat. Welcome back to the program, Congressman Shabbat. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, thank you, Brian. It's always great to be with you and your listeners.
And from behalf of my listeners in the 55 KRCD Morning Show, wish you and your family all the best of health and hope you are healthy in these goofy times. Goofy times lead to goofy legislation being passed. Of course, don't let a good crisis go to waste, and that has been absolutely the case with COVID-19. We've had, like, what, 9 gajillion bills passed. We've gone into deficit about, what, $4 trillion so far, and we're on track to spend an extra $4 trillion more. Let's talk infrastructure. With the backdrop of this headline, today's Wall Street Journal, Treasury expects to borrow $1.3 trillion over second half of fiscal 2021 following the COVID-19 relief package enacted in March. They're already borrowing us into oblivion. Congressman Shabbat, whether or not we need a transportation bill, can we afford the one, and do we need the one that is being proposed by the Biden administration?
No, we can't afford it. We do need to improve the infrastructure in this country, the roads, the bridges, the highways, the locks, those types of things, and that's what most of us consider to be infrastructure. Unfortunately, the bill that the Biden administration and the crew that now controls both the House and the Senate, what they're pushing, only a small percentage of it actually goes to infrastructure. A bunch of it now goes to things like a civilian climate corps and advancing racial equity and environmental justice and even making greener kids' school lunches, which basically means they're less tasty and more of it ends up in the trash. So a lot of things that people would never consider infrastructure, that's what they're pushing in this bill, and that's why they keep driving up the debt that not only we're going to pay for, but our kids and our grandkids.
Well, and there's no doubt about that, but let's face it, I think there isn't a politician, with the exception of maybe 3 I can think of, that cares a whit about fiscal responsibility anymore. I mean, you know, we lived through the Trump administration. Republicans had control and didn't exercise a whit of, you know, a fiscal responsibility. We racked up an additional trillions and trillions of dollars of debt, and look, we're still on the same track. We've been on this since the beginning of the Obama administration, if you want to talk multiple trillions annually.
Yeah, even prior to Obama. I mean, it's been something that was literally in the contract with America. Some of us are still believers. I introduced the balanced budget amendment again. It's the first bill I introduced this Congress. So there are some of us that care, but we're in a very small minority of us at this point in time. And if you look at what the left is up to and what the Democrats in control in the House now, over in the Senate, for example, the head of the budget committee is now Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
That's the mindset. You know, somebody who literally honeymooned in Moscow and cares a lot about socialism and the left, but has not a whit about him as far as discipline when it comes to finances. You've got the likes of Maxine Waters now, who's ahead of the finance committee in the House. AOC is driving the train in the House. She may not be speaker, but it's that leftist agenda that's winning. It's the Green New Deal, stuff that we talked about in the campaign last year, you know, people didn't want to believe that that's actually the direction that they would go, but that's what they're doing. You know, when we lost those 2 Georgia seats down there, that put them in the driver's seat. And so the left is winning. And what it's about, as far as I can see, not only has the Democratic Party gone much further to the left than they ever had in the past. You know, this isn't the party of JFK or Harry Truman or even Bill Clinton or even Barack Obama. I mean, this is the hard left that's now in control. And I think what they're trying to do, they realize they're going to get killed in the next election. And so they're trying to ram through as much as they possibly can before they lose power. It's huge spending. It's higher taxes. It's open borders. It's packing the Supreme Court. It's adding new states. All the stuff that we warned about, they're actually doing now. It's scary. But help will be on the way, but unfortunately, it may be a ways down the road.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I saw Mitch McConnell's comment about it. He said there's no Senate Republican that will back Biden on this $4 trillion grab bag, which has infrastructure and all the green in it. They have West Virginia's, I guess, Joe Manchin, who's against it as well. I think there are a couple of more logical and sane, perhaps, Democrats who may not also go with it. But they have the issue of, filibuster. They need 60 votes, supermajority, to get this through. And I've heard talk about reconciliation. Reconciliation seems to be used whenever the hell you want to use it, and you don't need to have a filibuster in place or not to use reconciliation to push something through.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, and they depend upon what's the parliamentarian over in the Senate makes these calls, and you can use the reconciliation once, sometimes twice a year. That's, for example, what Republicans used to get the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act through and get it to President Trump's desk. And that's the reason the economy was booming, you know, prior to COVID hitting. So reconciliation itself is a way where you can avoid the need for 60 votes over in the Senate. Of course, the Democrats have warned that if they don't get their way, they're just going to do away with that filibuster and the requirement for 60 votes and just pass everything by a simple majority. Hopefully they won't do that.
And I have to observe before we take a quick break here, Congressman Chabot, if you are right in your prediction about the election next year, I think they'll rue the day much in the same way they rue the day that they got rid of the filibuster for the judicial, because if there's a new Congress and the Republicans are in control, they can easily undo whatever the hell it is that the Republican or that the Democrats did.
That's exactly right, and that's how we ended up, fortunately, with three more or less conservative Supreme Court justices. The Democrats hate that, but yes, it's going to go in the opposite direction if they ram this stuff through this time.
Don't go away. We'll continue with Congressman Steve Shabo. We're going to ask him about Kamala Harris's visit locally and other issues of significance. Right after I mentioned the Cincinnati VA. Wonderful folks, and let me start by thanking veterans for their service to our country. God bless you all. It's 7:50 right now, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Brian Thomas with Congressman Steve Shabbat going through the issues. And Congressman Shabbat, I know you're aware that Vice President Kamala Harris came to the Ohio-Kentucky border last Friday. She hasn't bothered to go down to the border we share with Mexico, in spite of the fact that she's in charge of solving the situation we have down there. Maybe you can comment on that. But she was asked by the Enquirer quite a few questions, and one of them was about the Brent Spence Bridge, and is that going to be included in this American Jobs Plan? And she gave a politician's response, you know, dodge weave, duck weave. I think basically what I've come to conclude, no one's going to fix the Brent Spence Bridge. And in fact, fixing that kind of bridge, or any roads for that matter, runs completely contrary to the green efforts they're trying to get us away from driving around in cars and want to get us on public transportation. Why support that evil infrastructure that allows carbon-burning vehicles to pollute the environment and kill us all? Congressman Shabbat.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Brian. That's the problem. When we say infrastructure, we think of what most people think of, bridges and roads and highways and those types of things, and they think of the Green New Deal. They think of, at best, electric cars, which I would remind people that the energy, the electricity that electric cars run on, they plug in where it goes to a power plant, which is generally coal-fired or oil-fired or natural gas. So those are fossil fuels.
I was just going to suggest, Congressman, let us not overlook the mass quantities of energy that are expended in the creation of the batteries, from the mining of the rare precious minerals all the way through the manufacture of those batteries, and that those batteries have a finite life.
Exactly. And those batteries are generally manufactured in
China,
that's exactly right. Our adversary for the next 100 years at least, the people that are trying to not only steal our jobs, But their Navy is actually larger than our Navy, for example. So they're catching up and, unfortunately, in some areas surpassing us very quickly. And we have to be very cognizant of that. But back to infrastructure and what, you know, Kamala Harris, yes, she was here. And, yes, she should have been at our southern border. The fact that Biden puts her in charge and she has not yet even visited, and she stands for open borders. If you go back and look at the debate she and Biden had, they don't want borders. And when they talk about they're making improvements down there with not as many kids in cages, all they mean is they're now moving them into America quicker, where they disappear into the population. So there's no border control down there at all. So it's just absolutely incredible what this administration is doing to this country adversely in such a short period of time.
And all the polling, and I know how people feel about polls generally, reflects that the vast majority of the people, regardless of their ethnicity, and that includes my Hispanic friends, my Mexican friends, my friends that have relatives or actually came from south of the border, they too are concerned about this unregulated flow of humanity. There are drug dealers, there are gang members, and there, of course, there is the horrific abuse of all these children that goes along on this refugee trail, and this is all being fostered and encouraged by an administration who doesn't shut the border and plug the holes and welcomes even more of it.
Yeah, it's incredible, and we're going to pay for all of this. The American taxpayer pays for this. The American hardworking person who works in this country, basically their jobs are at risk. They're being taken away by a lot of these folks. So it's incredible that we've allowed this to go on as long as we have. Brian, I don't know if we've got time, but if we could throw in one other issue, issue three, it's so critical. I'm leaving here and going to vote at my polling place after I'm done with this interview. But I intend to vote against it. I've done robocalls against it. We've done mail pieces against it. This thing would just be a travesty if it passed in our community. You talk about defunding police. This is right in the heart of defunding the police, taking $50 million away from police protection on our streets and putting it into housing. Not that affordable housing isn't important, but the last place we ought to be taking it from is our security. So I would strongly encourage people today to vote against issue three if you haven't already voted absentee.
And you'll hear that from the current mayor of the city of Cincinnati, Democrat John Cranley. You'll hear that from David Mann and multiple other candidates who would like your vote for mayor in the fall, and you'll have a chance to vote on that today. You hear it from the Charterites. You hear it from the Republicans like Congressman Shabbat. And this is across the board no. The FOP is against it. The fire union is against it. I believe, if I recall correctly, the local labor unions are against it as well, Congressman Shabbat. I mean, there's no one that is in the know in terms of budgeting and finances that will welcome this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's nice to see that this is something that both, as you mentioned, John Cranley and David Mann, both of whom I've run against a total of three times, that we're all against it. So it's a pretty bad thing, and please go out and vote against issue three today.
Congressman Steve Shabbat, appreciate your words of wisdom on that one, and you're joining the program today to talk about the broader issues, and, let's hopefully that you and others can wise up and put the brakes on this runaway spending. It is crazy.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for your time, Congressman Shabbat. Take care and stay well.
Brian.
Coming up after top of the hour news, J.R. Carson, senior litigator with the Buckeye Institute. The judge in Franklin County ruled against the employees who were trying to get their commuter income taxes back. Is that the end of it? I don't think so. J.R. Carson after the top of the hour news. It's 8:05 right now at 55 KRC Talk Station. A very happy Tuesday to you. Brian Thomas here and on the phone. And I'm just so pleased to welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show senior litigator with the Buckeye Institute, Jay Carson. Jay, welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show, my friend.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I said it before. You know, I'm a lawyer. I was a litigation attorney just like you. You're senior litigation counsel at Buckeye Institute. I was for 16 years in litigation. And I said it out loud. I would have bet. I don't know how much all the money I have or everything that you are going to win this suit in Franklin County, that there was no way that a judge could find that a municipality could continue to take taxes out of someone's salary when they no longer have any connection with that municipality in terms of their employment. Jay, bring my reader or listeners up to speed on this lawsuit you filed regarding House Bill 197 and where we're going to go on appeal, which is a win, I hope.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the good thoughts. And you're exactly right. I mean, we respectfully disagree with the judge's decision in Franklin County. We brought the suit back in July, and the city moved to dismiss it on the basis that they said, no, there's no constitutional right present here, and the legislature can essentially do what it wants in terms of intrastate taxation. And we respectfully disagree for all the reasons we put out in the suit and in our brief. And that is, you know, Ohio Supreme Court law is pretty clear going back the last 70 years that for a municipality to tax someone, they need to have what's called a fiscal connection between the work that that person is doing in the city and some benefit that the person is receiving from the city. And you know, traditionally, again, for the last 70 years, that has meant that you can only tax someone if they live in the city or if they're actually doing the work in the city.
And it makes sense because that person, while they are there living or commuting into, are using the city services. There's police, there's fire, there's the roads, the infrastructure, all of that that goes along with taxpayer-supported services from the municipality. So if I'm there, I'm using it, I get that. But
yep.
If I'm not, I no longer have a connection. I mean, I draw this as like, well, wait a second. Is the Ohio State Legislature, is this judge saying that, maybe if Columbus decides that Cleveland has the right to tax me in Hamilton County, then they can go ahead and do that when I have no connection with Cleveland?
Yeah, and that's exactly the concern that we had when we brought this suit, right? We want to be able to draw that line and keep that line firm, I guess. So, listen, the legislature can't just make these kind of changes and expand the jurisdiction of the city to tax. Certainly, the legislature is allowed to pass regulations about how you pay the tax, when you pay the tax, how things are processed, what forms the cities have to use, all that sort of thing. But they can't fundamentally expand the city's jurisdiction when it doesn't exist otherwise.
Indeed. But House Bill 197 purports to allow just that. Now, that was passed, and it allows cities to continue collecting these tax during this COVID period until such time as Governor DeWine decides in his infinite wisdom he's going to withdraw his state of emergency declaration. Now, Jay, that just suggests to me, and my tongue's in my cheek as I'm saying this, do you think at all that the Ohio Mayor's Alliance or anybody else in a position of authority with regard to people who are getting these tax dollars that are ill-gotten gains, you think they're putting any pressure on Governor DeWine to keep this emergency declaration in place?
Well, I can't speak to what goes on in the halls of the state house, right?
Right.
I certainly know that, the Municipal League has been in favor of keeping this in place for several years to come. And, you know, the argument was and continues to be, well, look, this is more convenient for businesses because they don't have to sort out who's withholding, what they're withholding for and all that. And from our perspective, I think that's nonsense.
Yeah.
Because up until 197, people who worked outside of the city or worked part-time outside of the city, the employer can still withhold, and the person just applies for a refund and gets it. That's
right.
The way it's always worked, and that's what we're asking for.
And it's not, I mean, in these modern computer technology-driven days, I think that argument that it's a little difficult to keep track of this has gone by the wayside. I mean, there are computer programs that easily deal with taxation issues for employees.
Yep.
Well, I guess the idea that this much authority rests in Governor DeWine's hands, in other words, they changed the tax laws and they have ignored the basis for the earnings taxation and allowed him to just say, because it's emergency declaration, that they can continue to do this. You attacked that fundamental premise in the lawsuit in Franklin County. The judge didn't bite on that, huh?
Yeah, correct. And again, we're disappointed. And again, we think the judge was mistaken. We have filed an appeal, and that's moving forward in Franklin County. And we also have several other cases similar to this one, Hamilton County, where we're raising the same issue. So, you know, different judges see things differently, and Ohio has several district court of appeals. And And the way this works is, you know, you bring these suits in different courts, and sometimes you get different decisions, and it bubbles up, and maybe eventually you end up with the Ohio Supreme Court making the final say on this.
Well, and I expect that's fully what's going to happen. You get Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Akron, Toledo, and Dayton, where you've filed. Well, actually, those cities, and that's where the problem is. And this is where I think the rubber meets the road, Jay Carson, senior litigation attorney of the Buckeye Institute. They get about 88% of the revenue from these earnings taxes. That, and the vast majority, I knew two-thirds, for example, in Cincinnati, earning taxes are coming from people who don't live in the city. This, to me, sounds like a judge who's not as interested in the constitutional reality of this, or the unconstitutional reality of it. He's taking more practical considerations into mind, meaning these cities are going to struggle mightily, not only refunding what they've already got, but on a going-forward basis, dealing with the struggle of people not working in the city limits until COVID goes away.
Yeah. And look, I think this is, you know, this is an issue that the lawsuit didn't create this issue, and the pandemic didn't really create this issue. What the pandemic did is accelerated it. I mean, there was a trend of people starting to work from home and work remotely before the pandemic hit. Pandemic just accelerated it extremely quickly. And now you have lots of businesses and employees who have decided, hey, this arrangement works for us, right? The employers are spending less money on overhead. Employees are happy not having to commute. So they're going to continue to do that. So Ohio's reliance on commuter tax, Ohio City's reliance on commuter tax, is something that the legislature is going to have to look at long term, regardless of how this lawsuit turns out, because this is a change that's been coming, and it's not going to turn around anytime soon.
Yeah, there is no doubt about that. Well, again, I guess I'm still puzzling over the nexus between the governor's ability to just make this declaration and the idea that you just suggested that they want to keep this in place for years.
What I've heard just kind of floated in the halls of the state house is that we just would like to keep this in place for some time to come. Now, I'd also note, you know, the governor's emergency powers, the legislature does have the power now to take those away. That will be effective, I think, in about 2 months, 6 weeks. So there's that possibility. The legislature may say, look, the emergency is over. And at that point, then this piece of House Bill 197 should go away. That doesn't necessarily mean those people who paid taxes get the refund. That's sort of what we're still fighting for. But, well, the emergency power will end sooner or later.
Yeah, I can see the argument being made that you're not entitled to retroactive because it ended with the ending of the emergency power. But I still say you have that equitable argument and constitutional argument that it wasn't fair in the first place. You know, the mere employer presence, the fiscal, you know, reality that P&G is located in the city of Cincinnati has never been the predicate for them being able to take earnings taxes out of people who don't live in the city of Cincinnati. It was the presence of the employee working there that did. This flips that on its head, and they're just basically saying, well, the employer's got a presence in that city, so therefore they can tax anyone who happens to work for that employer. Man, that's P&G people working in other states, Jay. You can make that argument.
Well, you're exactly right. You hit the nail right on the head. Ohio courts, and there hasn't been – there's not a lot of case law on this question because, look, this has never happened before. The city
right.
has been so bold, but the cases that are out there say exactly what you're saying. The fact that your employer is in the city, that's not enough of a connection. And all the case law from the Supreme Court that talks about the due process that's due to a taxpayer says, look, what matters is where the work is performed. It doesn't matter where the corporate headquarters is, where the computers are sitting, or anything like that. It's where the actual work is performed.
Jay Carson, senior litigation attorney with the Buckeye Institute, fighting for the First Amendment, among others, BuckeyeInstitute.org. Their response, I recommend, you know, you donate to groups like this because without them, people can't afford the litigation costs. Litigation still is expensive, Jay, if I recall correctly.
It's getting more expensive.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. We could talk about that all day, but we won't. Thanks for the time you spent, your efforts in connection with the right side of this argument. I applaud your efforts. I wish you the best on appeal, and I have a feeling we're going to be congratulating you and your clients at some point. Keep up the great work, Jay, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. 8:16 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Have you noticed building material? It's 820 right now, 55 Care CD Talk Station. It's Tuesday and a very happy one to you. Big day today. Of course, we have the primary, but we also have other things going on in the world, one of which is the cost of building materials have gone through the roof. Anybody who's gone out to buy a 2x4 knows that it's going to cost you an arm and a leg and about $900. John Morris from the Ohio Valley Associated Builders and Contractors knows more about this than most. John, welcome back to the program. It's always great to talk to you.
May the fourth be with you, Brian.
Oh, Lord, you're not going to give me that crap, are you?
Why not, my brother?
You knew it would light a fire under me and agitate me. Yes, it's apparently Star Wars Day or something. Anyhow, that's unimportant. What is important is, you know, I'll take me for example. John, made a mistake. My wife and I, the only project we really have left in our home, we've gradually, over the 22 years we've owned it, improved one room, you know, improved another room, did this, added that, sort of making the home our own. One thing we haven't done is remodel the master bedroom, which was a true builder's special master bedroom, which means they skimped on the amenities. So we had a couple of bids a couple of years ago, and we just recently got another bid. Haven't gotten it yet, but I'm girding my loins because I have a feeling it's going to be about triple what our prior bids were. John, I'm pretty accurate on that, aren't I?
Yeah, the price of lumber is just skyrocketed, and it's a classic supply and demand story. It's very interesting because, but what we don't want people to go out and rush to conclusions are is those environmentalists who are going to jump up and say, oh well, you know, this is the earth being killed and this is being represented and that, you know, there's just not enough trees.
Not true.
Absolutely not true. There is a massive amount of supply of trees. Back in the 80s, an effort to curb the production of corn, which was in massive oversupply, the government actually subsidized and paid a bunch of farmers to plant a ton of trees. All of those trees are now mature and ready to be cut. And so the price of actual wood, you know, the tree itself, is traditionally low. Where we have is a choke in the supply chain in that those mills that turn those trees into 2x4s are, you know, were 40% shut down during the pandemic and are still 20% historically low than they were back when the peak of demand for, you know, processed wood happened in 2006.
So this is a processing delay. It's not an ultimate commodities delay. But there's also the other factor in this, and I've read it insofar as the gasoline prices going up, is that there's also a shortage of transporters. A lot of folks that used to, you know, drive tankers around, they quit because no one was demanding gas last year, and now there's a shortage of people who can even get the commodity into the gas stations. Do we have that same thing going on in the just shipping generally?
Yeah, and that's another part of this story as well. What is also at a historical high is just the amount of packaged goods that are being shipped directly to the home. And every one of those large purchases, if you're getting a washing machine, if you're getting an air conditioner, if you're getting a hot tub delivered to your home because you're spending more time at the home, it's going to come in a pallet that's wrapped in wood. And so, you know, you were talking about, I went back and, you know, I got a hot tub a few years ago delivered direct to the home, and it had about 30 2x4s wrapped around it. So if we've got a historical high in the amount of product that's being shipped all around the world and the amount of homes that are being manufactured and the amount of remodeling projects that are happening, those mills just cannot produce enough, and that's driving the futures market through the roof, and that's why the price of a home and the price of a remodel is going up. So right now, the Home Builders Association, our partners in the association business, you know, we're commercial industrial, and most of our stuff is built with steel studs, whereas the wood studs is more on the residential side. But the Home Builders Association is saying the average home price, just for the raw materials, the lumber involved, has gone from about $10,000 a home to over $40,000 per home.
Oh. Whoa, that's a substantial increase, saying the obvious. That, well, and that, I guess it'll cause people to delay their decision making. I mean, this is going to have to end at some point. You say the commodity is out there. It's just catching up with the demand. But will the prices ever come down? I know this is a risk that we run. We get used to a price being higher. And even if the shortage goes away, well, the price doesn't quite necessarily come down anymore.
No, clearly there was the massive bubble in the 08-09 where the government was just handing out mortgages to people who couldn't afford them, and that was skyrocketing the price of homes. Right now, we're seeing a skyrocketing price of homes because of the amount of stimulus money that's being dropped into the economy. So people are taking that money and they're putting it in a down payment on a house, and you've got a historically low interest rate. You know, when those if those interest rates tick back up, and then when that free money expires, you're going to have a reduced demand for housing. You're going to have a reduced demand for remodeling projects. So it will all adjust in time. But right now, there's this bottleneck, and it's not very easy for somebody to get in the wood milling business. It's a heavily regulated business. It's a high intensity business in terms of the amount of overhead and capital that it takes. You can't just, you know, you can pop up a hamburger stand overnight. You can't pop up a wood mill overnight.
Isn't that the truth? A lot of heavy equipment and machinery involved in that industry. Well, I guess I have to note that I think there's more than just this stimulus money that's causing people to buy. I think a lot of people are escaping the heavily concentrated populations of city areas and looking for a place where they can breathe and where they're going to end up working full time. That's a huge societal shift that I think is going to keep the demand on housing really high, John. And to that end, before we part company, I trust that there are a lot of jobs in the construction industry still available.
Associated builders and contractors, home builders, we're all looking to bring on skilled labor. These are careers. These are not jobs.
That's right. You always correct me on that one. You're right.
And you go to yourfuturecareer.org and you can learn about being an electrician and being a plumber and being a carpenter. And once you become a skilled tradesman, you know, go to yourfuturecareer.org, find more information about opportunities that are out there. Companies will train you. They'll put you through an apprenticeship program. You'll be a journeyman in 4 to 5 years at the most. And at that point, you can decide where you want to work, who you want to work for, and what you want to be paid. It's the ultimate path to freedom in the workplace.
I'm glad you used the freedom word. John Morris, Ohio Valley Associated Builders and Contractors. Good to talk with you today, and I'll look forward to having you on again soon.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care. Stay well, my friend. 827 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Secretary of State Frank LaRose will be on the program next. He wants you to get out and vote today. Hey, 31, 55KRC Talk Station, and a happy Tuesday to you, as well as a welcome back and happy Tuesday to Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. It's a pleasure to have you back on the program, sir. Welcome.
But not just any Tuesday, Brian. It's Election Day, so happy Election Day.
Happy Election. I heard a rumor that it was Election Day. There's a great article in the Wall Street Journal today I can just refer you to. It's called What Was That About Voter Suppression? The 2020 census data proving all of the alarmists that are screaming about voter suppression are wrong. If you look at the voter turnouts, quite amazing. But more fundamentally, the idea that and in a presidential election, we got like 66% of the eligible population voting. And yet on a primary day, almost arguably more important, if you're talking about a decision making between candidates, this is where the rubber meets the road. But we only end up getting on our best years, we get 20%. I mean, on our best.
Yeah, and that's why I'm working hard to try to remind people that today is an important election day. You're right. Everybody tends to focus on those presidential elections. And we all care who lives in the White House, but who works at the courthouse or the schoolhouse or city hall, that probably has a bigger impact on your life. You're also right to say the Chicken Little crowd that's out there constantly telling people about there's all this voter suppression and all of that. I almost start to think that they're the ones that are putting a chilling effect on people wanting to turn out. If you hear trusted voices in your own political party constantly saying there's all this voter suppression, well, then why would you want to participate in something like that? The fact
Good
is,
point.
In Ohio, it's easy to vote. We make it convenient. It's also trustworthy, and it's a false choice when people say you have to choose between convenience or access and security. You don't have to choose between those two. We have both in Ohio, and we're going to keep it that way.
We do, and the polling in that I was referring to earlier, it's just almost no one cited that inconvenient polling places or registration problems were high on their list or the reason they didn't vote. It was in the single digits. I mean, like 2.6% talked about inconvenience of polling places. But if you have early voting, which I think most everyone does now, it doesn't really matter where the polling place is. You're going to either be able to get there or you're going to maybe be able to mail it.
And last November, my wife and I voted from our kitchen table. We put the kids to bed and sat there as a couple and made our choices about how we were going to vote. And that's a really convenient way to do it. And by the way, Ohioans have had that choice for close to 20 years. And many people discovered it for the first time last year, but my hope is that they continue doing it because voting absentee is a really convenient way to do it. But even, you know, you mentioned how easy it is to vote in Ohio. There was a poll done last year. I think it was a CBS News poll, something like that. And it was something like 96% of respondents said it's easy to vote in Ohio. You can't get 96% of people to agree that today's Tuesday, but Ohioans know it's easy to vote in the Buckeye State. And anybody that says otherwise is just looking ridiculous.
Looking ridiculous. I'm just sad that more people don't call them out about this, because the thing that sounds most – that I find most offensive about it, not only is there no logic, reason, or should I say science behind the argument as the statistics prove, it's also extraordinarily insulting to the people who they purport to represent, that they're incapable of following the same rules that are written for everybody without reference to gender or color or skin or religion or anything. It's here it is, one size fits all, no one seems to have a problem following it, and yet the people saying there's being the folks are being disenfranchised are basically saying the people I'm speaking for can't manage that. That's disgusting. It's insulting, and I would argue even almost racist.
Well, and here's the other thing: when you're doing the sort of I call it the crying wolf thing, right? If you're telling people that there's all this voter suppression when it's really nonsense and it's not true, what you're doing is kind of cheapening the term. I mean, let's be honest, Brian. Any red-blooded, patriotic American would fight against true voter suppression. If it was happening, we would fight it because we want to be able to see an election where every voice can be heard. That's how democracy thrives, right? But when people use that term where it doesn't apply, they're cheapening it. And guess what? When it really does happen then, when there really is a wolf, nobody's going to believe it. And that's probably one of the most damaging things that these people do that use that term for their own self-serving political reasons.
Secretary of State Frank LaRose, appreciate you joining the program on this important primary election day. Anything in the works by way of further legislation in an effort to further ensure the integrity of the vote, or are we comfortable in Ohio that we've got things done right?
Well, I tell you what, we don't need radical changes in Ohio because, again, we're really the example that other states want to follow. I just testified in the Pennsylvania state legislature, for example, a couple of weeks ago, because they know that their neighbors over here in the Buckeye State do it right. Well, we need to make some changes, but not radical changes. And I've actually worked with a state representative from your neck of the woods right there, State Representative Bill Seitz, along with a state representative from Medina named Sharon Ray. And what we're doing is working on what I would consider some modest changes to the way that Ohio runs elections, but important changes to modernize the system and also to respond to the concerns that our elections officials have raised. Now, again, just like what we were talking about, some people, before they ever read the bill, were rushing out there and trying to do the partisan hyperbole of calling it voter suppression and that kind of thing. Utter nonsense. What this bill does is allows Ohioans to go online to request their absentee ballot, make it even easier to vote absentee in Ohio, just like many other states do. Streamlines the voter registration process to make that easier, and also, you know, fixes this problem where we have early voting occurring on the day before the election, and it's caused logistical problems for our boards of elections. So we can take those 6 hours on the Monday before, and we can just take those hours and put them into the weekend. So Ohio would still have 216 hours of early voting, just not on the day before the election when the boards are trying to get everything set up.
Well, you and other elected officials that might consider further election integrity actions, I recommend taking a look at what just passed in Tennessee overwhelmingly and with almost 100% bipartisan support. 27-0 in the Senate, passed 92-1, the Tennessee Election Integrity Act, which requires absentee ballots to contain a watermark as an additional sign of integrity, that is actually a viable, a real ballot and not something that had just been generated at home on a printer. And even Democrats were applauding it as a good bill, and it ensures the integrity of the vote for absentee ballots.
You know, that's an interesting prospect. I'd love to read more about the bill in Tennessee. What we have in Ohio is that you've got to prove your identity when you request a ballot, and then you prove your identity again when you mail it in. We do signature verification. That's one of the safeguards that we've always had in place in Ohio.
Right.
I think it's remarkable. Some people tried to sue me last year and said we should stop checking signatures, which obviously we won that lawsuit, thankfully. And those are the kind of things that we shouldn't change. We should maintain an accurate and honest process here in Ohio.
Well, and that was a prior law in Tennessee. Signature verification was the final verification. Now that's the second before checking the watermark. The watermark being the final verification. Any ballot without a watermark is therefore immediately thrown out. Just an idea. Sounds like a good one. It sounds like it got bipartisan importance in Tennessee. Secretary of State Frank LaRose, again, thank you for what you're doing, spreading the word about getting out to vote today. And you're welcome on my program anytime. I look forward to talking with you again.
Polls open until 7:30 tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. 839, 55 KRC, the talk station. Let me tell you about Bud Herbert Motors.